I get out for 6 months and I go back in and do a 9-piece, in which I had to do 7 years, 8 months. So 12 total.
How do you get the 9-piece?
I accidentally hit a cop with a car during a high-speed chase.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I accidentally hit a... shout out to all law enforcement officers. It wasn't intentional.
You got to share this story. On today's episode, I'm excited to have Stephen Testa, better known as EI the King, as my guest. Stephen will enlighten us about his adventurous past, marked by a penchant for high-speed pursuits and police chases. He'll delve into the circumstances that led to his imprisonment, offering a firsthand account of life behind bars, including his experiences with the infamous Booty Bandits and snipers in prison. Get ready for an eye-opening look into the world few have witnessed from the inside. If you enjoy the Locked In podcast, remember to leave us a review on Apple or Spotify and subscribe to the Ian Bick YouTube channel. Now let's sit back, relax, and get ready to lock in with EI the King.
How do you get the nickname EI?
It stands for Eternal Influence. It's like my rap name.
I like
that. Yeah, EI the King, but just EI for short.
Yeah, I saw the EI. That's what we talked on Instagram, right? Uh-huh. First. That's where I connected with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Sometimes people like fill out the form online and they have to like bump it up by like, I try to go through as like many of my Instagram messages as possible, but sometimes like there gets to be so many and this and that. I feel bad when I don't respond to people too.
Yeah.
But I'm working on it.
That's real though.
But yeah, thank you so much, man, for coming out today. You had a long journey to get here, man.
Of course.
Where'd you come from?
I came from Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, shout out to Tampa.
Yeah, shout out to Florida, man. Yes, sir.
Did you grow up in Tampa?
No, I'm originally from Houston, man. But I mean, I was raised in Florida, Sarasota County. So I think my mom divorced my father when I was three and then took us to Florida. So I grew up in Florida.
I went to Houston for the first time this time last year and I loved it. But I like Austin more.
Yeah.
But Houston was fun.
Yeah, Austin's dope too, but I just love Houston though. I'm there every month. I record in Houston music, so I'm there all the time.
It's a different kind of vibe in Houston. It's not as like crazy as Austin, I guess. It's more laid back.
Nah, I would say the other way around.
Oh, it's crazier in Houston?
Yeah, yeah, Houston's lit. Yeah, Houston's crazy.
I guess where I went, it wasn't like all like compacted, like city-like. I forgot, what's the famous area in Houston? I'm not good about cities or anything.
I don't know what you're talking about as far as like downtown in Houston.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
Yeah, it was like where all the Airbnbs are, like kind of like outside the city a little bit.
I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. Yeah. But anyways, man, yeah, thank you for coming, man. It's a pleasure. I think the audience is going to be excited to see all like the knickknacks you brought on. It's going to be a very special show.
Yes, sir.
And excited to jump into it.
Of course.
And I think you had something for us you want to get into.
Yeah, I was just telling you, bro, because of course, you know, I want to share my experience in prison, you know, and all my prison stories. But it's kind of hard for me to do that unless I like tap in or lock in, you know what I mean, from my prison experience. And part of the way that I do that is I gotta throw on the uniform, dog. You know, so if you don't mind, you know, we can go ahead and put on our Florida Chain Gang blues real quick. All right.
What, do you steal them out of the prison?
Man, I can't give you details how I got them, but I got them, bro.
What do we got? Oh man, brought the whole outfit.
The whole fit,
here.
Man. These are Florida. Oh, Florida Chain Gang.
It's just
blues,
a one
man.
Piece, right? Man, I feel like a. What is it, like a dental hygienist or a,
like the scrubs
or a doctor right now?
Yeah, RN or something.
Hey, Skylar, how do I look out there? The angle still good? I got my brother working for us today. It's his first day on the job, hopefully he doesn't screw up and get himself fired, you know? what's the impact for this for you? Why these?
Yeah, the reason, because, you know, I got my own podcast, whatever, and I tell prison stories.
What's the name? You got to plug it. What's the name?
Yeah, of course,
it?
Man. It's called The Incarceration Podcast. And I just talk about how prison forever changed my life, you know, like as far as my experience, you know, in the past, the present today, and then as far as like in the future, you know, just how throughout all the years of me being incarcerated over 12 years, being institutionalized at a young age, juvenile programs, juvenile detention, and then, of course, adult prison for 12 years, how that, you know, radically transformed my life. You know, so whenever I put these on and I keep my ID, my Florida DC card in my wallet at all times, and I do it to champion what I experienced because ultimately the Lord transformed my life while I was incarcerated. But it's something that I will never forget and I purposely will never forget. It's my why and the reason why I do everything that I do.
That's awesome, man. People busting my chops all the time for carrying around that card. Because I have the federal inmate one, the red one. I had it in my wallet for a while. I had it in my car, and then now it's in my office wall. some people don't understand unless they've been there. You know, it's symbolic. I'm never getting rid of that thing.
Exactly.
Even though it says I'm like 6'2 on it, which all my friends know is the biggest crock of shit.
Yeah.
I'm 5'11. You know, you got to round up.
Yeah.
So, E.I., tell us about where you came from, like your early roots. Where, what was childhood like for you?
Yeah, of course, man. I think a lot of people, they can look at me, they see me tatted with braids, and I'm a rapper, and I'm kind of like gangstified, whatever. All the years in prison, people would automatically assume that I come from like poverty-stricken community. I come from the hood, and that's not the truth at all. You know, we're lower middle class, but Sarasota County in Florida is one of the richest counties in Florida. And the city that I grew up in, Sarasota County, is Venice. So this like retirement village, nothing but old white people, you know. So I was brought up, you know, in the burbs, and I was an athlete the majority of my childhood. Father wasn't in the home. I found my identity, my purpose, and my belonging on the football field. Long story short, just because my pops wasn't in the home, looking for like affirmation and acceptance from older men. And my homeboy's older brother was a big dope boy. He'd come to the football games with a mouthful of golds and chains on. I was a leader of the football team, captain of the team. So I was naturally a leader. But I seen the leadership that he had in the streets and how everybody looked to him. And it was cool to me. You know what I mean? It was like attractive. And of course, with hip hop culture. And long story short, around 13, you know, I started smoking weed, drinking, fighting a lot. Shortest kid on the football team, shortest kid in every grade, hit puberty late, short man complex. Felt like I had to prove my point to everybody. Not only was I fighting a lot, but when I started smoking weed, I realized that I could actually smoke for free if I sold it. Then I realized not only could I get weed for free, but I could make money. And then I realized I could also be a leader in the streets. And that began to like quickly lead me to spiral out of control. Fighting a lot, getting expelled from high school to high school, going to juvenile programs, juvenile detention, and just getting institutionalized at a young age. And of course, selling marijuana, immediately switched to selling pills and cocaine and crack and just hanging out with a whole bunch of older OGs in the streets. And I'm super young, but to me, I'm finding and I'm looking and I'm searching for my validation and my fulfillment in the streets. And of course, because I'm ineligible from school, getting expelled, I can't play football. That was my new purpose, was a street lifestyle and just spiraling out of control.
Do you think if you had that feeling of like acceptance and whatnot, and maybe even popularity, or you got that attention, you wouldn't have traveled down that path?
I mean, I was super popular in school. I was, you know, captain of the team. I was a star like jock when I was younger. I think, you know, when you're a kid, you're not consciously aware of like how you feel inside. You're just like a broke, hurt kid. And you don't know why you're acting out. You don't know what you're really looking for. Looking back now as a mature man, healing and like progressing past that, I can look back and analyze it correctly. But then as a kid, I didn't know. I was just a hurt kid. And I think it was really just, you know, just me looking for, you know, validation from probably like older men, because I was looking for like a father figure. So I look up to like the dope boys, and I didn't have to, you know what I mean? I put myself in that. I thought it was cool because it was glorified from hip hop culture. And I thought my cousin, like my homie's cousins and my dog's older brother, I thought they were the coolest people I knew because they were older and they were getting money and it looked flashy, you know what I mean? So I think I was just attracted to it, and I willfully, you know, chose that route.
And I think that's totally normal too, because a lot of adults don't even know how they were feeling as a kid, and they don't even face that until they're older.
Yeah.
Because when they act a certain way in their relationships or their friendships now, and they're like, oh, that's triggered by something from my childhood, that's when we're diving into it.
Yeah.
That's what you kind of see all the time. That's what, like, when you go see a therapist or whatnot, they're trying to dig out what affected you in your childhood.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important element to the stories that we share on this, because you were, for the most part, a normal kid.
Yeah.
Like, however people came to judge you later on, that wasn't you in the beginning. That's like ground zero. That's your starting point.
Yeah.
If we had like your best friend with you today here at the studio, what would he say about you? What are like three traits or four traits he would say about you?
Number one, he'd say I'm crazy. I'm a lunatic, man. Even now, still doing good outside of the streets. I'm still crazy. I'm a goofball. But especially back then, I was wild. I just didn't care. But ultimately, it's because I didn't care about myself. You know what I mean? I realize that again now. I didn't care then because I didn't care about myself. So I was just throwing everything away. So he would say I was crazy. He would say that I'm a visionary. I'm a go-getter. I'm a hustler. I was a dope boy then. And now, even though I don't hustle illegally now, I still hustle legally. So I'm a go-getter. I'm a visionary. I chase. I run down what God bursts in me for vision. I don't stop. I'm consistent. I think I'm the hardest worker I personally know. And I think my best friend would say that about me too. Also too, as far as most importantly, you know, the faith aspect of my life, that I'm a Jesus freak. You know what I mean? I'm obsessed with Jesus. God transformed my life. And not only do I radically pursue Jesus, but God uses me to now reach the streets with the gospel. So I'm missional. You know what I mean? I'm a preacher. I'm a pastor, a street pastor, you know? So, and then maybe lastly, weird. I'm a weirdo.
We're all weird in our own ways.
So, yeah.
Do you think if you had that passion for your faith back then, it would be different? Like, you were, it seems like maybe before you were chasing something different, now you have something good to chase, which I relate to in a lot of ways because I believe in what I believe in, and I am very, like, spiritual, and, like, I believe everything happens for a reason and whatnot, and I chase after that, and I live by that.
Of course.
So is that something similar to you?
Yeah, I would definitely say it would probably prevent me, but I tell people all the time, like, as I go into prisons now, I go to prisons throughout the nation, and I speak, I preach and teach and perform and all of that. So one thing that we always champion in our ministry, Block Us, when we go back into prisons, we tell, like, the dope boys, like, yo, that's a God-given gift. We just pervert it in the streets. So I think likewise with myself, like, the hustle ambition, the being wild and crazy, robbing people, kicking in doors, whatever, those are, like, courageous gifts that God gives us naturally, but we just pervert it in the street. So, yeah, definitely when God began to transform my life and I discovered my purpose, that became my driving force in life. So I think before that, there was, like, a driving force based upon the God-given gifts, but there was no, like, end aim. I didn't know what I was chasing. I was chasing street fantasies, and it did nothing but lead to destruction. I was chasing the wrong thing. The driving force was towards the wrong direction.
What do you think would have been, like, a great program that could have had to offer you at school that could have, like, kept you on track? Because we have a lot of, like, teachers and therapists and professionals that watch the show, probation officers, and they that's what they're curious about. They want to know what they could do to change someone's life.
Of course, a principle in ministry is called native on native. That's the best, like, effective ministry. And what they mean by that is, like, for instance, prison ministry. The best prison ministry, hands down, is convict on convict, and not a convict from the outside, but inmate-led ministry, because they live together. That's the most impactful ministry, is, like, the inmate organic-led church inside prison. But also the ministries coming in, the most effective normally are the fellow convicts when we come in. So I feel like the best programs that schools or prisons or jails could offer is to find these youth, these young boys or girls who are starting to, like, get, like, distracted with street lifestyle, whatever it would be, is to find men and women who they can look up to, that they can identify with, who's been there. They're not going to listen to some teacher who ain't never been where they've been at. You know what I mean? They need to look up to people who look like them, who've gone through what they've been through, and people who they can actually look up to and kind of idolize. And they'll be able to walk alongside them in life and mentor them. I think that's the biggest thing, man, is mentorship. Actually investing time with people, pouring into them.
I agree. And it's the lived experience aspect, which is why I think I find myself in such a unique position, because it's not every day you have a podcaster that is able to build a platform where the host is someone that has been to prison. And I'm sure you could relate to that because you have your own podcast too.
Yeah.
But there's very few of us in the world that are like that, that have these platforms and are sending a positive message. I'm not talking about the platforms where it's like you go on and it's just like
glorifying.
Yeah,
crazy stuff.
I mean, we've been talking, you know, like almost 20 minutes in it. We haven't even gotten into the prison stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, there's a power in that, and as I get older and as I continue this journey, I'm kind of learning how to harness that and realize, like, that there's a voice to be used here for a lot of good, and I think for that's what keeps me going, too.
For sure, bro. Shout out to all the convicts out there who are doing right with their platform, man.
I love
Forever
that,
Convict,
man.
That's the brand. Forever Convict, bro. We champion where we came from.
Oh, that's your t-shirt?
Yes, sir. That's the
brand. You gotta get me one of those. I'll rock it on
the show. Forever Convict, man. We champion where God delivers and transformed our life at.
Cool. We'll plug you at the end of the episode too, but for people listening, you know, we'll have, like, your link in the description and everything and whatnot to your podcast, your website, your social media, all that. So where do things start to take a turn for the worse? Because it's not the end of the world to sell some weed. It doesn't sound like you were, like, a kingpin at that age either, right?
You were
just a typical person.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, how normal was it to sell weed back then? What time period are we talking about?
Yeah, so I was probably 13, 14, so I'm 33, so that had to be like 03, 04. It was really like the summer break between, like, eighth grade to ninth grade. You know, middle school to high school is really when things started spiraling. So, I mean, of course it was common, you know what I mean? But I think that I immediately started selling, like, pills, like Adderall, Xanax, and then cocaine, especially crack at a young age. You know what I mean? I remember taking the bus to the hood in my city, and I'm, like, at the trap or on the block with these older dope boys who are in their late 20s, you know, young 30s, or some of these guys who are 40 years old. And I'm a little white boy from the suburbs, you know what I mean, who's forcing myself into this environment. And I already knew, like, everybody my age, like, from the hood, so people already knew who I was. But I was intentionally, like, positioning myself in, like, the worst possible circumstance in life. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to be a dope boy. Scarface became my favorite movie. Whatever, like, I think a lot of comics, we have a balance problem. We don't understand moderation. We're either all the way in or all the way out. You know, so I was all the way in the streets. You know, I wanted to be, you know, Scarface. I wanted to get as much cocaine and crack I could. So I'm selling dope. You got a young age on the corner in the hood, you know, serving cars coming through and trying to buy large amounts of cocaine and figure out how to cook it. You know what I mean? So anyways, I was never the big kingpin, never. You know what I mean? That was always the dream. You know what I mean? Around like 16, 17, I buy like ounces of cocaine and things like that and, you know, get it cooked up and, you know, sell crack. And once again, too, Sarasota is one of the richest counties in Florida. So we didn't like petty hustle. You know what I mean? Everyone's chasing money, like money. You know, most of the clientele, they spend a lot of money. You know, they're business owners or, you know, they're addicts. But most of these like clientele that we had, you know, they're functioning addicts and they're spending a lot of money. But I would say things really started spiraling. Like I said, I got expelled from school for fighting. And then whenever I was ineligible from football and I lost my purpose, I forfeited it because of me being in the streets and not having good grades, is I didn't have an outlet anymore. I didn't have a purpose. I didn't have an identity. So, you know, my full new identity was, you know, the streets. And that's when I just started caring, you know. And I remember like being in my first juvenile program, and it was like a 6-month program. It's based upon points. I kept failing every week just because I'm being crazy, cussing out the police and fighting and getting in trouble. And we had to go to counseling every week. And I remember the counselor sat down with me in one session. I never talked. I'm a hot-headed jit, not friendly. I'd sit there with a little Etch-A-Sketch and wouldn't say nothing, because you mandatory have to do it once a week. And I remember I had to start over this six month program, and I'm already at my 5th month because I kept fighting. He told me like I had to start it over. And he was like, Steven, he's like, why do you keep fighting? I'll never forget. And I remember looking at him with tears in my eyes. I'm like, bro, I don't care. I don't give a F about anything. And I genuinely meant that. He knew I played football. He said, well, listen, the football, you give football your A game. Why are you giving life your F game? And I didn't say anything, but I remember going back to like my room in that program, and something began to turn. Like, then I think I really began to like become aware that I didn't care about myself and I was throwing my life away. And of course, I didn't change routes. I just kept spiraling, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that if you were given a second chance at football, it would have been different for you? Could you have avoided prison? Or were you destined to go down that path regardless?
Honestly, I probably, like, even if they'd let me play football, it probably would have helped maybe detour the intensity of how fast I spiraled. Because, you know, I went to prison at 18. My graduating class was walking, getting their high school diplomas. I'm walking down prison hallways, you know what I mean, getting my GED. I think it probably would have slowed it down, but I was going to prison, bro. I wanted the streets. I wanted that lifestyle. That was inevitable for me. My mom called me my 18th birthday. She said, just so you know, I'm not going to bond you out. I'm like, dang, mom, that's my birthday. She's like, I'm just letting you know, you're going to go to jail. You're not a kid anymore. You're going to go to the adult county jail, and I'm not going to bond you out. Yeah, 18th birthday. Boy. Shout out, mom. She's been riding with me forever. Love you, mom.
What a phone call. Now, you used the word jit camp, and that's something 1090 Jake said all the time on it. Yeah. And that's, I'm guessing, a Florida thing.
Florida thing, yeah.
What's a jit camp? I never got to ask him about it, but I'm sitting here like, what the fuck? He keeps saying jit like 1,000 times.
Yeah. Shout out to 1090, man, putting off for the convicts and especially the Florida prison system. So in Florida, they have what is called jit camp. It's, you know, jit's like a Florida slang. But in the Florida criminal justice system, they have a youthful offender program to where when people go to prison for the first time, and I think if they're under the age of 25, rather than going to an adult prison, they can go to a youthful offender prison, which is still adult prison, but it's 25 and under. And they do that to protect the youth from like the booty bandits, you know what I mean? Like these old school convicts who've been taking booty their whole bid, you know? So they do that to protect them, but in all actuality, jit camp's way worse. You know, it's gladiator school, that's the nickname for it. So you can either get sentenced to a youthful offender prison from the judge, which normally you can get like, I think, you can get a lesser sentence. That's normally like a route to kind of take a plea and kind of get spared from the court. Even if you don't get sentenced as a youthful offender, like I didn't get sentenced as a youthful offender. I took an adult plea. I'm like, I don't want to go to jit camp. You know what I mean? I want to go to the adult side. But even though I didn't get sentenced as a youthful offender, the state Florida Department of Corrections classified me as a YO because I was 18. Mm-hmm. So right when you go to Orlando, they say, here you go, here's a red hat. JIT. Going to JIT camp.
Did you experience any booty bandit scenarios?
Oh, yeah. Not at JIT camp, nah. I had maybe some like awkward moments. I was a confinement orderly. Normally, like in prison, especially in Florida Department of Corrections, whenever you start doing things on your jacket, they have you keep doing that. So I was always a confinement orderly. So I went to prison three times. First time at 18, third time by the time I was 23. So every time I go to prison, because they always seen on my jacket, I was a confinement orderly. So I think I just remember one time. Obviously, whenever you grow up in the prison system, you know there's booty bandits. So being a young white boy, you gotta have like a unit on your face. You know what I mean? You gotta, because if you look scared and if you look weak, man, people are gonna prey on that. You're shark bait. You know, so I think, you know, above all, you being a young, but once again, too, I lived a street lifestyle. So I was, of course, internally, yeah, I'm terrified, scared, you know what I mean? But you just gotta, you know, kind of put the mask on. But like I said, the confinement story, I think the one moment I can really remember being tried, I'm passing out trays, you know, because a confinement orderly, you go to their cell, you know, in confinement, and you put the trays in their flap. And I forget what he said. He said something. He's like, ooh, you know, some old school black dude, you know, he's like, ooh, white boy, you know, saying something crazy. So I kind of ignored at first when I hand him the tray. But while I'm walking down the hallway, I still hear him saying something about like how fine I am and those red lips or something. So I remember after I'm done passing out trays and I made sure the officer went at the officer station, I pulled back up on the door and I banged on the glass. I said, come here, bro. I said, don't ever disrespect me like that again in life, bro. Don't ever. He's like, all right, my bad. Respect. And because you got to do that. You know what I mean? Because if you don't say anything, even though he's in confinement, he's behind a door, still you got to have that. You got to operate like that in prison. Yeah. You know what I mean? Even if I wasn't on that in prison, God transformed my life in the chain gang. I was doing ministry work. But still, you got to conduct yourself like in an assertive way. You can't let nobody disrespect you.
A confinement orderly, doesn't that have a lot of position of power? Because you're like the middleman to get notes to people.
Of course, they're shooting kites.
Yeah, they're shooting kites. Yeah. And for anyone that doesn't know, a kite is like a message. Uh-huh. Contraband, I guess, uh-huh, if you have to. What are some situations you've been in as that?
Yeah, honestly, too, bro. I used to face conflict for not shooting kites. You know what I mean? Because once again, like I was sharing with you before, while I was incarcerated, I encountered Jesus for real, and he completely transformed my life. So I'm trying to do right in the sight of the Lord. So the best thing that I would do for the guys locked up, because of course you feel for them boys, man. I've been in confinement. I've done 3 months before behind the wall. You already know how it is. It sucks. So what I would do, I try to look out for everybody by passing out extra trays for free. You know what I mean? Because I'd be blessed. I have money on my books. That's a hustle as a confinement orderly. You sell trays, you know what I mean, for stamps or for hygiene or whatever. So I'm just blessing them boys. I'd take like one day, I'd switch each cell door and I'd just give just random trays. And I try to keep it even because I go to each door the next day. But yeah, some guys would get upset with me because I wouldn't take kites back there. But for the most part, whatever pound I was on, like I had a reputation. Everybody knew who I was. I wasn't, you know, like I said, I wasn't wilding out, gang banging, living some savage lifestyle. I was authentically following Jesus and it was real and people knew that. And if anything, I ministered more to the gangbangers and I had relationships more with the guys who were the violent ones on the compound. So everybody knew how I was living. But there were times, especially when I was younger, to where people would get pissed. I wouldn't bring back kites or whatever. But the worst position than that, I was a butcher, man.
A butcher in prison?
Yeah. Well, really? Don't give you knives. Okay. They just call it the butcher man in food service because you're in the freezer and you have like all the hamburgers, all the chicken and all that. So that was a more conflicting situation than anything. Because
you're probably making bank.
Well, that's where everybody wants to steal at. You know what I mean? So if anything, while, like I said, I was trying to do righteous in the sight of God, I didn't want to steal. I didn't want to, like, you know what I mean, help people by stealing. So I had to stand in the paint as far as like standing on righteousness and doing right. And that's where I actually learned to become assertive for doing good. You know what I mean?
So. I mean, I've always wondered, is it technically stealing if you're taking that food that's in like the prison kitchen that you're literally getting paid cents to work at? Yeah, like being in prison is one thing, but they're not even paying you a fair wage.
Not even in Florida. You don't get paid at all.
You don't get paid at all?
No, unless you're a canteen man or a shoeshine guy.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's technically, I guess it goes on both ends. I feel like maybe it's stealing if you're taking away from another inmate, but mm-hmm, a lot of the times they're just giving tiny ass portions and yeah. It's not like you're taking food out of the mouth of another inmate at all.
Of course. Yeah, but what I meant by though is that they're trying to take like cases upon cases.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I eat as much as I want. Everybody does back there. you know, but they're just trying to like, they're trying to steal the whole freezer.
I remember guys walking out with raw meat, like a brick of raw hamburger meat or something. Guys would throw that in the microwave.
Yeah.
So 18, you go in and then you go in again between 18 and 23.
Yeah.
These are just like short sentences, right?
Yeah. The first bid I did 2.5 years from 18 to 20. 2.5 years, I get out. I was only out for 8 months. I went back in, did another 2 years. I get out for 6 months, and I go back in and do a 9-piece, in which I had to do 7 years, 8 months. So 12 total.
How do you get the 9-piece?
I accidentally hit a cop with a car during a high-speed chase.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I accidentally hit a... shout-out to all law enforcement officers. It wasn't intentional.
You got to share this story.
Yeah. Remind me to tell you, too, how I got handcuffed out here this time. And I felt like it was a redemptive moment for me to be able to, like, show love to the police.
Okay.
So for the first time in my life, I get out of prison the second time. And, bro, I'm genuinely trying to follow Jesus and do right. So I'm not in the streets. I refuse to sell drugs. I'm trying to be a father to my kids and do right. So I'm actually, for the first time in my life, working a job. I'm roofing. And I'm going to church. I'm not really involved in ministry, but I think something I missed out on because I grew up like in prison and like juvenile programs, I never really experienced the nightlife. I've been to a club and strip clubs a few times, but I was more trapping and getting money than anything while I was out. So I never really experienced the nightlife. So a lot of my homies who I grew up playing football with, they went to college and they came back to the city and they're like ex-frat boys. So they go out all the time and drink. So rather than hanging out with my homies who are in the streets, I try to switch my, you know, peer group again and start hanging out with my dogs who are play football with because they're not in the street selling drugs. So now because I'm hanging out with them, now I start going out with them on the weekends. So now I'm going to clubs and bars all the time. So long story short, you know, just me being a fighter and being aggressive naturally, even though I wasn't living that lifestyle anymore while drinking, it would be common to where sometimes I get in fights or altercations at bars and clubs. So this particular night, I get in a fight in the club, I get kicked out of the club. And then keep in mind now, to this day, I have no memory of this night. This is just what I know from my paperwork and from what people told me. Only brief flashes. So I get in a fight in the parking lot, knock out a guy. He's left unconscious. While I'm leaving the scene, this is what my paperwork says. While I'm leaving the scene of my vehicle, the police officer standing in the road screaming for me to get out of my vehicle. I won't move. He says, I rev the engine. He draws out his firearm and then I floor it. And then I hit him. He rolls on top of the car. It's supposedly trying to like aim his firearm within the windshield. And then I throw him off the vehicle by turning the wheel. I try to hit another police officer and then put him on a high speed chase. And in Sarasota, Florida, there's what there's called royal palms. They're like 2 stories high and they're like palm trees. Then they're like this thick. So I derooted 2 of them because I was going like 90, 100 something in a Nissan Altima 2009. Deroot 2 of them. My seatbelt snaps. Airbag doesn't deploy. Ejected from the windshield, however many yards. Femur snaps through my thigh and I get a bay flighted to the hospital.
You got ejected through the windshield?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So because of the car accident, I don't remember anything. I wake up in the hospital. By the way, none of that happened. I barely nipped the officer's leg with the vehicle. That's what from people who were there that night on the strip scene. And like, that's what I heard, you know. But to this day, I have no recollection of that entire night. I have brief flashes throughout the years of incarceration. I would have dreams or brief flashes of like the accident and things like that. Because I guess I lost my memory from the accident.
So you're saying the report is different from eyewitness accounts?
Yeah, of course.
What do you believe?
I don't believe. I would never gun him down intentionally. I believe that he walked in front of the vehicle and I didn't see him. I accidentally hit him. He didn't even get hurt. He had minor abrasions to his leg.
Even under the use of substances, you don't think you would have done that?
Nah, I've always been crazy, but I had no reason to, bro. I mean, it'd be different. I went to prison the second time for a high-speed chase. And I know I'd do that because I had a whole bunch of dope in the car. You know what I mean? So I had to get rid of the dope. Well, allegedly. You know what I mean?
This is your second high-speed chase.
Yeah, I've probably been in 3 or 4.
You're the high-speed chase guy.
I was known for that. I had a car full of dope. They wouldn't get the dope, but they'd eventually catch me, you know?
In Florida, are they allowed to continue the chase? Like, I know up here, they have to stop after, I think, a certain... They can't pursue you.
I've never had them stop chasing me.
So they continue to chase you?
Yeah.
What, do they throw a spike strip?
Well, no, because remember, I hit the palm trees.
No, I'm saying the second time.
The second time under prison.
Yeah.
No, I totaled the vehicle at a 99 Cadillac DeVille, and I totaled it in 41, and I had them like on a foot chase for like 3 or 4 hours. They had dogs, helicopters, and they finally found me like 4 hours later and sprawled out on the ground.
Oh, man.
Ninjas with masks and the dogs.
So what's the logic behind getting into a chase like that? Are you just trying to save yourself at all costs?
Well, yeah, and because like I said, I had dope in the car.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If I get caught with the dope or allegedly what could have been in the vehicle, you know, then that would have been a lot more time.
You threw it out the window?
Allegedly. So, but listen, back to this, back to the last time I went to prison with the hit in the cop.
Yeah, so the hit in the cop.
Bro,
yeah.
I wake up in the hospital in the ICU, bro, 3 days later with two officers in the room, cuffed to the bed. I wake up. Remember now, femur's shattered, all messed up. I'm banged up. I wake up and I see two cops in the room and I'm like, what happened? What happened? And they're like, you about to get life. So I'm like, what happened? And they refused to tell me what happened. So the nurse is coming in. I'm like, please tell me what happened. And she's like, you got in a car accident. So I'm thinking about my homies who I was with that night. I'm like, are they all right? Are they all right? She's like, who are you talking about? You're by yourself. I'm like, what about the person I hit? Are they okay? She's like, you didn't hit anybody. You hit a tree. So now I'm clueless, bro. You know what I mean? I'm cuffed. I'm scared. I know I'm going back to prison. So then a detective comes in the room, I think like the next day. So right when he walks in, I said, bro, I ain't got nothing to say. I already know he's trying to like get me to say something. So he stays in the room and he's talking to the officers. I think he was telling them the story, trying to taunt me, hopefully like I would like interject or say something. But I'm just playing possum, listening to him while he's talking to the cops. And for the first time is when I hear everything. And he says that story. So I remember just laying in the hospital bed like, dog, I'm finna face like 25 years of life. Because in Florida, they got PRR, you know, Prison Release Act, to where if you commit one of those crimes, you're getting 15 out the gate, you know. So I knew I was facing a lot of time that time.
And what about your mom? Is she coming to visit you? Is she getting you a lawyer while you're sitting in the hospital at all?
Yeah, I talked to my mom. She's just happy I was alive. I mean, shout out my mom. I love you, mom. She's a real one. She held me down forever. So yeah, she got me a lawyer. While I was in the county jail. And, you know, of course, I think I had some money put up from like roofing or whatever. And I had one and only plea deal. And it was and this is how I know my case was Bo Rickle, dog. That's how I know I didn't do what they accused me of. Because there was one and only plea deal, which was 9 years. And if I didn't take it, the threat was they would HVO me, Habitual Violent Offender Act me, or PRR me, which enhances the points. And I'm facing, like I said, at least a minimum 15. My charges was aggravated battery with like on a law enforcement officer, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon on a law enforcement officer, aggravated battery on a civilian, whatever. So I'm facing 66 years just with these charges. So they had me on my lowest permissible points, which was 9 years. So that's how I knew out the gate that, man, I didn't gun him down and he didn't hit the hood like they said. He just got nipped in the leg, bro.
Was there any part of you that wanted to fight the case to get the trial?
Definitely not. No way. I know there's nothing to win. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing to win with the body cams and the footage. The lawyer told me out the gate, you know how it is. It's politics, bro. It's all politics. Mm-hmm. Lawyer told me out the gate, bro, we're not going to deposition any witnesses or any of the cops. He's like, I'm telling you now, you need to take this, your lowest permissible, or they're going to hang you. What do you want to do? It's not if you FaceTime. I couldn't beat anything. Even though I don't remember it, I know I got in a high-speed chase and I still hit the cop in his leg. There's nothing to take the trial because if I lose that, I'm dead. So the lowest permissible, it sounded good to me. Better than I woke up thinking I'm facing 25, you know, or at least, you know, so a 9-piece, of course, that's a stretch, but it's better than getting your whole life taken from you.
Yeah.
So
you got the 9 years, you signed a plea deal for 9 years.
Yeah.
Where do you end up going?
Where'd I gonna go? I went to Suwannee the first time. I went to Suwannee.
What's it called? Suwannee?
Yeah, Suwannee CI. Man, the police run that. Suwannee sucked.
What do you mean the police run that?
Well, I got a crazy story about Suwannee actually too, by the way. Police, Suwannee's super strict. Like every institution in Florida, I think probably in every prison in America, you know, every prison has their own culture. You know, and even like sometimes even a dorm can have its own culture. You can go to the worst pound in the state, and this is the worst, most violent prison. But if you go to a good dorm, like, all right, you're all right. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, the culture, but then again, too, prison is always the same, but there is some worse places than the others. I've been to like all the worst prisons in Florida, but Suwannee's more ran by police. From my personal opinion, the best place to do time is gangland, where it's most violent, most chaotic. And of course, it's uncomfortable to live in those type of environments, but normally those type of pounds are ran by the inmates. So normally when that's like the culture, it's normally better to do time because the respect level's high. So as long as the respect level's high, it's a good place to do time. Mm-hmm. But whenever you're at one of these sweet cupcake camps, whenever the police run it, the respect level's low. And then like, you know what I mean? It's not good time like that. So Suwannee, the police ran it, but it's crazy, a story about Suwannee, right? So extortion is huge, you know, of course, you know, in any prison, I'm sure in every state, but especially Florida, and especially sex offenders, you know? So at Suwannee, I'm trying to leave out the names of the prisons because I go into all these prisons now. So I'm sure it's not ran like that anymore. You know, shout out to all the administration and staff.
But you know, that's how you make change, by telling these stories, too. So it's a positive thing because you're not throwing like a specific name under the bus.
Yeah, of course, of course.
That's what creates the change.
Of course,
you know?
Of course, the reform. Yeah. So anyways, whenever these inmates, like a new bus would come full of like new cocks, you know what I mean? Like new prisoners coming in.
They call them
new cocks.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, like, you know, like, you know, fish or whatever, some spots like in Florida, like a new inmate is a new cock.
So like a rooster or like a dick?
I don't know what it stands for. I just call them new cocks.
Okay,
know?
So new cocks.
So they're green, you know, they don't know anything. It's their first time, their first day in prison or whatever. So whenever the bus comes, the administration will go ahead and let like the inmates know like who the sex offenders were. You know, so they already got a list of all these boys who got sex offenses and what their charges were and details of them. So these guys who would get the list and they would work on their housing, it'd be like laundry guys normally or whatever. These guys were affiliated, gang affiliated, of course. So they would go ahead and they had like some type of agreement with other sets on the pound, whatever, as far as like they would share the extortion. You know what I mean? I'm sure it was favored one way or the other based upon who runs the pound, but they would somewhat kind of try to keep it fair with the extortion. So the moment that these guys, these sex offenders, get to their prison, well, get to their bunk in their dorm, they already got somebody pulling up on them within the first 5 minutes. What's good? Let me holler at you. Sit them down. You know what I mean? However they choose to do it, with the knife game or a couple guys with them, and they let them know out the gate. Like, because that was one prison that was like, the culture, extortion, you know? So they let them know out the gate, like right when they got there, like, you got to pay to live here, bro. Like, we know your charges, and they even let them know the details. Like, so you'll be safe, you know what I mean? But, you know, we expect this, and this, you know, weekly, monthly, whatever, you know? So that's one thing about Suwannee, man. They had extortion on lock.
As someone that had done time before going into this situation, do you have the upper hand, like, in regards to politics? Anything like, because you're an experienced inmate, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I would say just like, man, I tell people all the time, everybody's prison experience is different. It's based upon who you are and how you conduct yourself and how you do time. If you go to prison, if you gang affiliated, and if you want to like bang out, you're going to have some conflict. You know what I mean? There's a lot of chaos going on, so you'll be in the midst of it. Or if you're a guy and you just want to like focus on you, get your education, stay out the way, you can do that too. Sometimes trouble can come towards you, but as long as you stand your ground and know how to conduct yourself like a man. And I think for the most part, like you hit it on the head, I'd already done 2 prison bids. And I tell people all the time, you approach a long bid differently than you would a short bid. Because your short bid is like, I'm just going to stay out of the way. You know what I mean? Just let me make a home safe, stay out of the way. You know what I mean? Stay focused and make it home. But whenever you have a long bid, it's like you're not even thinking about going home. You're worried about when the menu's changing or like how come they ain't calling yard, you know, or, you know, the next pen pal you can get, the next female to write you or whatever. So whenever you're doing like a longer bid, you're more concerned with like reputation or how you conduct yourself. You can't let stuff slide per se, you know, because that stuff follows you, bro. And once again, you don't have to be the most gangstified, you know, crazy person in the world, but the ultimate law of prison is respect. So you just can't let anybody disrespect you and you have to be assertive.
What are some things that on the street we wouldn't find disrespectful, but in prison an inmate would find disrespectful?
Bro, I tell people all the time, when people ask me like what's maybe some of the most difficult things coming home to transition, is respect, bro. Because when you do so long in prison, we are like subconsciously institutionalized because we're used to living to a hostile environment to where the repercussions of disrespect is violence. That's not normal and that's not cool. But when you live in prison for so long, that's what it's like. So out here, I remember when I first came home, I'm like, dog, people are so disrespectful out here. Like crazy disrespectful. Because I started driving Uber. And like people, so yeah, former convict driving Uber, and I still drive too every once in a while. So I remember like, you know, people getting an Uber ride and they can be disrespectful as hell. You know what I mean? It's like, dang. And like, I'm learning how to like bite my tongue and not be assertive or not confront it. But I would just say, man, attitude, people got a unit on their face out here, bro. Like in prison, like the most gangstified, violent people are normally super respectful because they know what happens when they're disrespected. They're gonna kill you, bro. You know what I mean? Or they're gonna let it be known you can never try them like that. So they're super respectful, you know? So yeah, I would say out here, bro, like maybe it's like units, people like sizing people or like interjecting in conversations or being rude or just not being polite, not having manners. Thank you, holding up the door. Just little stuff. I don't know. It's maybe hard to pinpoint, but like in the moment, like you could feel it or you could be like, dang, that was rude as hell.
Yeah, I did the Uber too. So I know what you feel like. And there's a big misconception that felons can't drive Uber. A felon can drive Uber. I think it absolutely depends on the charges, which I'm shocked you're able to do it. No offense.
Speaking of the high speed chases, hopefully the Uber isn't looking. Don't cancel me, dog.
But that is pretty crazy, you know? The other big one is like Tinder that it says in the bylaws, I guess, like felons can't be on it. But I think it's also it applies to like what type of crime you have.
That's super discriminative. Felons can't be on Tinder.
Something like that. Like if you had a felony,
I would understand
conviction.
Like a sex offense or something.
Exactly. And people are rude as fuck driving an Uber. Like, and I don't get the people that tip. I mean, that don't tip. I'm gonna take you to the airport. And you're not gonna tip, and you got the corporate fucking car. Like I pick up these business guys and nothing, not a penny. It's not even your fucking money, bro, and you can't even send a tip. It's wild. And then even general, like I'm in my apartment building sometimes, you hold the door open for someone, nothing.
Won't even look at you.
You're in the
elevator.
Like
you're supposed to hold it.
Not even a hello.
Peasant.
Yeah, like in prison, you're walking out, you give a nod, you say hello, you know, unless you don't fuck with the person, but it's just the manners. But then when you go down south, everyone's so nice. You walk in, hey, hello, how are you? A conversation at the drive-thru. Here you go to fucking Dunkin' Donuts and you say hello and they're like,
what you want, bro?
What can I get for you? Hi, how you doing? Like nothing. So you leave a tip, nothing sometimes. It just, man, I get worked up about the manners and stuff because I try to be as nice as, you don't know what someone's going through at the other end of the spectrum. So, you know, you just be nice. Karens, that's where the term Karens come from. You got all these Karens in the world.
Crazy Karens.
So when you got this 9-year sentence, did you know how much time you actually had to do on it going into that? Are you thinking like, I got to do 9 years?
Well, in the state of Florida, I already knew you get, I think it's like 10 days a month of gang time. That's all you can get, you know? So I actually remember being so frustrated. I caught an outside charge in confinement. In the county jail. Because I was just hurt, bro. You know what I mean? I was suicidal. I was honestly thinking about killing myself in the county jail. I remember I got in a fight over the phone. I've got a broken leg in the county jail. I'm in the wheelchair. I can barely walk. I got to learn how to re-walk again and all that. And the guy in the medical cell, like, double-backed on the phone. And, like, he know I got next. And I'm trying to talk to my daughter or, like, my son or I'm talking to my kids. So I snap and I just beat the brakes off the guy in the cell. And he, like, tells on me when he goes to visitation a couple of days later. And it hit me with outside charge, battery of a detainee. So while I'm in confinement, I end up taking my plea. You know, I already knew I was getting it and taking it, but I actually get sentenced. And that's when it hit. And I remember being in the confinement cell, like, staring at the sprinkler, knowing how people kill themselves in confinement cells, you know, with a bed sheet, you know, wrapping around their neck, doing a tight noose and doing over the sprinkler and killing themselves. And I remember it's my third time in prison, bro. I'm 23. You know what I mean? And I couldn't get it right, dog. And I was so ashamed. I was so disgusted with myself. I was going to miss the entirety of my children's lives, childhood. And I just felt like I was bringing everybody shame and I was doing nothing but hurting people, like people who love me. So I'm like, what's the point? You know what I mean? I'm just going to end it. And I remember, honestly thinking about killing myself, bro. But during that time, you know, praise be to God, I didn't. You know, that's when, like, I counted out all my time and how much I'd do. And that's when I figured out, you know, just from counting my gang time, if I get all my gang time, I'll do 7 years and 8 months.
All right, so I have two questions for you about this. One, did you beat the brakes off this guy in a wheelchair? Were you in a wheelchair?
Well, no, I got out the chair. Okay. I was, like, hopping around.
What, on crutches or something?
And he could walk fine. He had a broken arm. Well, so it's like handicapped people fighting. he could have whooped me with this cast on if he was thinking about it, if he wasn't willing to hurt his arm again.
That's got to be a seed. You got to get that video.
They should have gave me that video.
What's it like to be handicapped in prison?
Well, I was in the county jail, and they put you in the medical. It sucked. That way, I mean, it was terrible because they didn't have canteen, you know, because everyone in there had like a lot of people had either had broken limbs or they had diabetes and they didn't want them on GP to get whatever canteen. So it sucked. For me, like I said, I was on the wheelchair for 5 months.
Long time.
Yeah. And I was isolated in the medical thing. It sucked, bro. But for me, I had physical therapy like twice a day, I was able to walk the hallways. So that was my freedom. I was just out there flirting with nurses and trying to hang out and talk and try to get extra bag lunches. You know, the nurses are stealing like little insurers from me. Everyone loved me, you know, because they knew how much time I had. And I'm out there just trying to laugh and kiki and hang out and get out the cell, you know.
So. Yeah, you're very personable.
Yeah.
But you're also the guy that they got to watch out for in prison because you're always schmoozing, you know, working at an angle, relaxing with all the guards and stuff. You got a good way with words. So it benefits you, but the guards got to look out for you.
Yeah.
When you got that 9 years and you were in the mentality, you said like you were, you know, trying to find yourself and figure things out and you want to be on the straight and narrow. Did that make you feel like, you know, fuck this, I'm going back to how I was before?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? I'm trying to do good and it's not working.
Yeah, of course, bro. Because what happened was when I was 18 years old, I authentically gave my life to Jesus in the county jail. I got saved for real. My life has forever been changed. But the very next morning, I got in a fight in the county jail. And I say that all the time because I believe that was a snapshot of how my spiritual journey would be. Super chaotic, super sporadic all over the place. And I'll be authentically following Jesus in prison, being on fire for the Lord. And I come home and I go right back to the streets within a couple of weeks and a month, selling dope, robbing, toting fire, you know what I mean, tripping. But meanwhile, I feel like it was fake because that wasn't who I was anymore. So, of course, especially that third bid, it's like, dog, I felt so fake. I felt so flawed. I felt so hypocritical. And I was mad at myself and at God. So, like, I'm finna thug this one out. And, like, so when I went back into prison the beginning of that last bid, smoking weed all the time, smoking K2, trying to, my main aim was, like you said, was women officers. You know what I mean? Any attractive women officer, I'm at the flap trying to talk to them, trying to get food, trying to get sexual with them. So that was my intent at the beginning of my bid. But that didn't last for maybe about 5 months until the Lord just kept dealing with me and eventually led me again to repentance and surrender.
Were you ever successful getting with a guard?
Nah.
No. You tried?
Yeah. I think in Florida it's called gunning. I don't know what they call it, another stage. It's like
that's a jerking off in front of the guard. Yeah. Don't tell me you're a gunner.
Not a secretive gunner.
What do you mean a secretive
gunner? The secretive gunners are the ones that like hide and do it. You know what I mean? So we're like
open gunner?
You know?
Well, you gotta explain yourself.
It's just so embarrassing, bro. I can't believe I'm even talking about this. I'm gonna keep it a buck. But in the Florida prison system, they'll call them like eaters, you know, as far as like the women officers who are like they wanna see it. You know what I mean? That she's known for eating or whatever. So sometimes, like, whenever I was in talking to certain female officers, you know, you don't have the opportunity or the access to bust off and have sex with them or whatever. But, like, they'll, like, want to see you, like, jack off. You know what I mean?
So what, they poke their head into the cell or, like, look through the window?
Or they'll do it to where, like, they are looking because, like, in open bays, they can look into the bathroom, you know what I mean, from, like, the officer's station. So, yeah.
So you were one of those guys that was just whacking off in front of these CEOs.
No. Not all the time. Definitely not. Occasionally.
But did you ask me,
did it happen? Yes, it happened. But I wasn't one of them crazy gunners. Definitely not.
You're saying there's two types of gunners. There's the ones that do it to the woman and the woman don't want it. And then now there's this...
Bro, it's a sickness.
There's this new... thing. This is the first time I heard of it where the
it's
woman actually want well
it's
for me
new.
It's new
yeah.
where you do it, you whack off and the woman want it. Oh man.
That sounds so terrible.
Can a woman give consent to seeing another man whack off? I don't know.
Listen, I'm talking about literally the girl that I'm speaking about, like that's like in conversation.
Let me see it, Jerry.
Yeah, I want to see it.
Dude, this might be the craziest thing I've heard all year. Yeah. The year's just beginning.
But listen, look, about gunning, bro. Dog, there's this, bro, listen, it's a sickness in the chain gang. I'm talking, you got some perverts, bro. Like, they master gunning to, like, the 10th degree. Listen, so I done heard stories now of guys, like, because you got the coats, you got the jackets. So some police, they're on beat. Like, they won't, like, if a woman officer sees a guy, like, with his jacket on, with his clothes and his hands down or like in his popping out, she already know that he's gunning, so she's gonna get on him. But there's this guy and he's known for this. He would take like a piece of string or whatever and somehow he would have this thing to where like the string would go down like his shirt and like I guess he would tie something around like his dick, you know, and to where he could just be pulling on the string and he would just be standing at the officer station. Bro, listen, crazy stories.
Dude, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever
heard. Sick, dog.
But some guys get handled for doing this. Like they'll get jumped. Or,
of course,
or beat
if they're
up.
Doing like yeah, like some guys they're wilding out. They'll go like in the day room.
The non-consent gunners.
Yeah, they'll stand on top of a bench and they'll just pull out in front of the lady. You know what I mean?
What are the men doing? Are the men like get the fuck out of here?
Yeah, some guys will snap on them. Some guys they'll do it like secretively, you know. But some guys who wild out like that, yeah, normally they'll get like the dorm. The guys will get them from around there, like because that's disrespectful. That's crazy. No one's trying to bend the corner while you're getting some hot water for your soup and you see some guy on the table with his dick out, you know, beating off to the lady.
So when you're doing it, are you like, is the other woman like making gestures? Like, is she like giving you something back or is she just staring there with her mouth open?
The specific
like
situation I'm speaking about is like,
you gotta break it down for the viewers,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you gotta explain to yourself. So take it from the top, like of how the interaction goes down to the end.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just, you know, a continual conversation with the officer, you know what I mean? As far as, and then like you letting her know, like, of course, like, well, I'm trying to, what's up? Can we slide to the bathroom? You know? And she's like, you know, it's hot. They're watching me. Blah, blah. So they have like the showers in the open bay. And like I said, they can see into the showers in the open bay from the officer station. So that's normally like a classic move if the officer, you know, is a eater, what the guys say, you know? So, you know, that's me asking like, what's up? Can I get the shower? And she, you know, she's like, yeah, well, I think she had told me she wanted to see my dick. She wanted to see it. So just that, you know, can I get the shower? Yeah, of course. And then while I'm in the first shower, she's looking, watching. I apologize to everybody. I'm not a pervert, man. All right, please.
No, it sounds better because you pretext it with you guys had an initial conversation.
Of course, yeah.
Now explain that these other gunners, the non-consent gunners, there's no pre-conversation. They're just pulling it down and whacking it.
Yeah, and they're just shooting. They're just mad gunners. So, and like I said, it's a sickness, bro, and it's disgusting.
But you would still label yourself as a gunner, or do you have a different
type of definitely not. I hope not. Do you think I fit that category as a gunner?
No. You explained this is a little bit different. This is like sexting without the texting part.
Yeah,
this is like in person sexting.
It's like in live sex cam.
Yeah,
kinda.
Live sex. Well, yeah. I don't know how you would call it. Yeah, sex cam, something like that.
Yeah,
interesting, man.
Crazy. All right, look, hold on. Wild. I did think of another story though while we were talking.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Especially because you're asking about booty bandits, right? So growing up in prison, like I remember, I was legit. You know what I mean? When I started off in prison, not only at JIT camp, but then even going to adult camp. You know, I'm young, 19 years old, so I'm JIT. So I remember, like, the old heads would call me, yo, JIT. But then, you know, growing up in prison, now, like, I'm a mature man, so you call the other guys JIT. And then just, like, being in prison for so long, learning the ropes, understanding how prison works and the politics and all that. Like I said, I was never gang affiliated. I never wanted to be. I had no opportunities to be. I was genuinely following Jesus, and my prison journey was a missionary experience, able to share the gospel. Apart from me falling and gunning, or consensually gunning, let me stop. You know, just genuinely seeing, you know, God impact people's lives and trying to help guys get out the street lifestyle and that thought narrative and help them find their purpose through faith in Jesus. But also too, like you see like a young buck come in, you could tell he's green. You know what I mean? So you kind of want to look out for bro, like telling him like the laws of the land and like what to do and what not to do. But there's also a balance of like kind of staying in your own lane and not like treading on other people's turf. Especially when they're already marked. So this story, I'll never forget. I think it's my second bid. And I was actually about to go home. So I really didn't even want to say nothing. So this JIT, they put him right next to me. He's in the bunk next to me. Young white dude. And he's super cool. I can just tell with his personality. I'm not really friendly. I'm not really talking. So I can tell he's a cool dude. Anyways, I see immediately his first day in the dorm. This old booty bandit is a no booty bandit. Immediately pulls up on him. Sitting on his bunk, being friendly. Gives him a couple cigarettes. You know what I mean? So you already know he's making his move. Any convict knows this, or anybody in the dorm, he doesn't know. You know, like I said, I'm going home. I'm trying to stay out of everybody's lane. I'm just trying to do me. So I see this, and I'm like, oh, I want to say something to him, you know, but I don't. But I'm going to see how he conducts himself. I'm going to see what he does. I'm going to see how he maneuvers. So time goes on, and now I see the JIT going to his bunk. I'm like, dang, bro, don't do that. You know, so I'm thinking this in my head. So time goes on, maybe like a week or so. And he's like athletic like myself. I'm a workout, you know, buff. So he's working out as well. And he's always like talking to me. So then one day he's like, bro, can I holler at you on the yard? I think he started working out with me in the dorm because I always keep like a big, like a whole bunch of books, you know, weight bags. So I think he started working out with me. We started talking a little bit more. And he said, bro, I got to holler at you. I was like, of course, what's up? He's like, I'm going to tell you on the yard. So when we hit the yard, he's like, bro, he's like, you know that older guy who always pulls up on me. So I'm like, yeah. And he's like, bro, I think he's got like some funny intent. I said, yeah, bro, I've been like waiting for you to identify that. He's a booty banner, bro. He's coming for your butt. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to see that. He's like, I know, it's weird. Like, I can tell. Da, da, da. I said, so he's like, so what do I do? You know, he's asking me, what do I do? I said, listen, bro, you just got to freaking be direct. Like, yo, I'm not friendly. You know what I mean? Like, don't be disrespectful, because he's going to, this is a booty bandit who's also a convict, to where if you disrespect him, he might put a knife in you. You know what I mean? Or he might, because he's a young white guy and he doesn't look that intimidating. He kind of looks a little passive and a little weak. So I'm like, just got to be assertive, bro. Like, no disrespect, but I'm just not friendly, bro. I'm not looking for friends. You know, I'm just focused on me doing time. So I tell him what to say and what to do. So he's like, all right. All right, you know, so, and we're going to lunch, I think it was like later on that day, or maybe it was dinner. Yeah, it was probably dinner, because we had a wreck after yard at lunch. So we're going to dinner, and I'm thinking he's going to do it by himself. You know what I mean? Like, you should, you know, not bring me into it. I'm about to go home. I'm trying to get no conflict with his old head behind nothing. Not that he's like a threat or nothing, but still, handle that yourself. So he's like, starts walking with me. He's waiting for me to come to the door. And apparently the booty bandit was waiting on him too, to try to walk with him to like chow hall. So he, while I'm bending the door, right when I'm walking out the door, he's standing at the door, and the old booty band is like kind of walking up on the side of me, like trying to pull up on him. And out of nowhere, the booty band says something to him, and the guy goes, get out of my face, bro. You know, he kind of like snaps, like, I ain't friendly. I don't want no friends. And he did everything I told him not to do. He just took it to 10. So, and then the freaking booty bandit, nah, he nuts up. He's like, what, shit? He's like, I'm trying to hand you the right hand of fellowship. You gonna disrespect me? Da-da-da. Talking about getting his knife. And anyways, but the whole point I was getting at, as far as like the booty bandit story, bro, like, booty bandit is definitely a thing, you know, in any prison system in any state. But that was just a crazy, you know, story that I remember of seeing it happen with somebody else and just trying to like help bro like navigate through it.
You know? So what ended up happening to the guy? Did he get the booty taken?
No. He was good. He left him alone. He didn't run him down.
Basically follow.
Yeah. Right then I told him, because he was nutting up. The booty bandit was trying to fight him right there in that moment. So then that's why I interjected, because he, like, I think he knew what he was doing. He waited for me to like kind of be there, which I didn't want. So I was like, man, old head, chill, bro. Just respect the man. He said he didn't want no friends, bro. Leave him alone. You got to respect that, dog. And he's like, man, no, bro, no. And I said, bro, chill. And he just left him alone.
So follow your advice to stay away from the booty bandits in prison, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So and I just thought of some random story. So
since we're on the prison topic, you got a very interactive episode for us. You got all these prison.
You want to see the stuff,
yeah,
man?
You got some prison knickknacks. I came down to grab you. You're like, here, grab the bag.
Yeah. All right. So look, man, one thing, I'm a writer, and I also got to do the full story about what I do now at prisons, right?
Yeah, of course.
We'll get to that. But, man, I'm a writer. I'm a rapper. But I think before I started rapping, I learned how to, like, I did poetry. But anyways, I journaled my whole 12 years, bro. Listen, this is just one example. I literally took this from a box this big at my apartment that I sent home. I journal every single day. Look at this. And look how small the wording is.
Oh, wow. I wish I had handwriting like that.
You know what I mean? I wrote that small to save paper.
That's crazy.
You know, so I would journal every day. And this was really like a place for me to vent and to deal with things and really to process things. Number one, I'm sharing how like God's dealing with me and like kind of changing my thought process and my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I also like share and document what God was doing in other people around me and how God was using me to serve other people. But it was a place for me every night to process my days. And I think this is super helpful for me, how to deal with my time and how to like navigate mentally through my journey and process things properly. What I could have done better, what could I have done different, you know what I mean? And anything. So I'm probably going to publish this one day. I got a whole freaking huge locker full of like prison memoirs. You know what I mean?
That's great, man.
And of course, you got the classic Chain Gang picture books. And actually, this right here is that's the mugshot, and that's actually the
you're
newspaper.
Looking wild, bro.
That's the newspaper article of whenever I accidentally hit the police officer with a car. Okay. So you know, you got all the picture books. You know, so these are the classic. All this is classic Chain Gang.
You could buy the books on commissary, right?
And then you just put your own pictures in it, okay. Of course. And then, of course, I keep all this, man. I'm super sentimental and just like,
what
with
does
the
it mean?
ID.
What does it mean to you to keep everything?
I keep everything just because, bro, it's like my experience. Because in there is gold. You know what I mean? So like, why would I get rid of it now? Mm. I hold on to it, and it just like I said, kind of like it's symbolic for me. Of what I experienced and what I went through and how that was a pivotal moment in my life in which God used to transform my life.
I love that.
And of course, you know, once again, it's all mail. Got boxes upon boxes of mail. You know what I mean? And then lastly,
those are all letters that people sent you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would send them home. I didn't keep them all the years. I would send them all home because I didn't want to get rid of them.
Yeah. I used to send, I actually still have, I threw out a lot, but I still have a lot of the writings that I wrote in prison when I was in the shoe and stuff.
Yeah.
Sent those all home and I got in a little binder. It's in my office right now.
Okay. There you go. And then the classic canteen bag, you know, you got the ramen in there.
That's probably one of the smaller net bags I've seen. Normally, they're a little bit bigger, right?
Yeah, this is an old one.
Old school, okay.
Yeah, this is an old one.
I see you got the prison mug.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the issue?
My coffee cup.
They issued that to you? Or?
They don't sell it. This is gold in the chain gang.
But was that for free? Because I know, like, everyone would get a mug.
They would sell these. This is gold, and they don't sell them no more.
Look, it's, like, stained with coffee.
Look at that, see?
That's how a lot of guys' coffee cups were, though. They would get stained.
You purposely don't clean them.
Yeah.
Let that oil sit, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Let the oil sit.
Yeah, they
That's
wouldn't
the
clean
yak.
Them.
That's the yak, man.
Wow.
You know what's funny, too? See how it's cracked on the sides?
Yeah.
It got cracked from getting transferred so much. It would be at my bag. You know what I mean? It would crush from the weight of stuff. But I would still drink out of it. Even in there, I would just make like little coffee shots, straight oil, yak, you know what I mean? And just sip on it and just keep refilling it.
So a commissary like bag like that filled with all that stuff, how much does that run you at the store?
Bro, listen, nowadays, can you believe one soup goes for $1.06?
Oh, shit.
Now.
I remember it was 30 cents, 35 cents, 40 cents, actually, I think.
Yeah, now, bro, they're skyrocketing in prices, dog.
So what's like a mackerel cost? Because those were a dollar.
Probably like a couple of dollars.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Prices are going up, man.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully they up the spending limits.
Bro, it's insane, bro. Because like you used to be able to fill up a whole bag and survive. You know what I mean? If you spent $25 at a store, you would survive for like a week depending upon how you ate. Mm. But now, bro, you get $25. That's just your hygiene.
Yeah.
You ain't even got no money for food. You know?
So what year did you end up getting out of prison?
I got out in 2021.
So that was a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah,
at the
I've been
peak
out
of COVID.
2 years, a little bit over 2 years.
Are you still on probation or?
No, thank God. I was on parole. Well, in Florida, they don't have parole. They got CRD, which is like controlled release or whatever. You get out on your gang time. So you're pretty much doing your full 100%, but now it's on supervision with your good time.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out and I was on CRD, I think, for a year and 8 months.
No issues?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I wanted to bring up. A guy was in cuffs, dog. I was doing Uber. Check this out. I was doing Uber one night, and I had a 10 o'clock curfew. You're not allowed to leave the county or the state, and you got a 10 o'clock curfew. So while I'm driving Uber, it's not even 10 o'clock, but I had permission from my CRD officer to be out for business purposes. So I'm doing Uber. I got a rider in the back now. And somehow like a police officer gets behind me with his undercover gang task force. I don't know this. They pulled me immediately. I already knew something was funny because right when he pulled me, I put my window down. He said, Mr. Testa, he already knew my name. Of course, the plate. He's like, step out of the car real quick. I already knew. I'm like, dang. And I'm scared because I'm on freaking parole, CRD. So I step out the car. He walks me to the back of the vehicle, grabs my wrist, puts me in cuffs. He said, what you doing out past 10, bro? You know what I mean? You know you're on parole, bro. Like, this is a violation. You know I got to take you in. I'm like, sir, listen. My parole officer gave me permission. I'm allowed to be outside past 10 for business purposes. He's like, well, do you got that written? Do you got, like, something to show that? I'm like, no. You know what I mean? Like, I got his number. Can you call him? So they get my phone. I tell him his name, and they're calling him. So one officer takes my phone. They go back to the other squad car. But there's, like, four cop cars now. And it's like some, I think they're doing something with some like gang bus because they're all like gang task force. So now they're sitting there and I had the opportunity to, now I'm like trying to save myself, like save face. I'm like, listen, but it's also a great opportunity for me to share my story and how God transformed my life. I'm like, listen, bro, I'm doing great now because they're looking at my charges. And especially when I got violent charges against law enforcement officers, they can tend to take that personal. I'm like, dog, God transformed my life in the chain gang. Now I go back to the streets with the gospel. We're impacting the streets and we're impacting the community to help guys get out the street lifestyle. So anyways, they're calling my parole officer. He's not picking up. Thank God they get a hold of my supervised release, like head office, like person in the office. And they said, just let him go, have him check in the morning. And we'll double check with this parole officer who's allowed to be out. So thank God they take me for the first time in my life, bro. The police let me out of cuffs. And the police are actually thanking me and commending me for my service in the community. And they shake my hand. You know what I mean? So I believe in that moment, God was like showing me, because I'm doing great. You know what I mean? Like walking faithful unto the Lord and walking in God's purpose for my life. God was showing me, like, despite whatever opposition that I face, like, yo, I got you.
Why do you think they pulled you over?
They probably just ran my plates, honestly.
See, that's like the issue I have with like probation and whatnot, because it's all about trying to get a fresh start.
Yeah.
But in your instant, you got pulled over. You had a passenger in the car. that could have been the end of your Uber career right there. Mm-hmm. That passenger, what happened to the passenger?
Oh, you know what's funny too? While they had me in cuffs, one of the officers went to my car and was tapping on the window, and she opened the door. She's like, "Lady, I'm sorry, but you can just go ahead and cancel the ride. We're gonna have him, you know, for a second. We don't know what's going on." But he even told the lady, "Give him 5 stars." He didn't do anything and just misunderstanding. So that was kind of cool on his end.
Yeah, but you got the wrong person. They're putting Uber driver got arrested. This and that. That's not good.
Yeah, not at all, bro. Listen, I've been pulled. No exaggeration. I was telling somebody, I just got pulled the other day. I get pulled all the time, bro.
It's the beard, man.
I always get pulled.
You kind of look like a skinnier DJ Khaled. And did you see I know you said you don't really watch the episodes, but the clips we had, that guy Chip Williamson with the beard. He had like the really
Spanish guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a little bit bigger than you. Same look. Dude, the beards go. I'm telling you, it's all about the beards.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I always get pulled, bro. And I think, honestly, they just want to look in the vehicle. They just, like, want to get a visual.
Really?
Yeah.
Just to make sure no one's kidnapped or
I don't know. Like, I get pulled all the time, and I never got one ticket.
Wow.
I've probably been pulled, no exaggeration, about like 8-9 times within a 2-year period.
So what's life like for you now?
Yeah, man. So while I was incarcerated, man, not only did God transform my life, but God gave me a vision for my release. I've always been a rapper. It was just like a way for me to vent about my life and things I was going through. I've always been very expressive. I've always been a communicator. So I just put it in music. So while I was incarcerated, the God began to transform my life. You know, in prison, like all the jitterbugs, they'd be in there freestyling, beating on the locker, beating on the wall. So God would stir me up to go in the midst of it. And plus, these are my homies too. And I would freestyle, but I'll rap about like the gospel, but I'll put it in a way to where I'm still rapping about the streets, but how God delivered me out the streets. You know, and like I seen how it really affect people, and people are like, dang. And plus, two guys using me while I was in prison. I planted 4 different inmate led churches at 4 different prisons while I was incarcerated. I was preacher, man. You know what I mean? That's who I was while I was incarcerated. For me, my prison journey was full time missionary journey, and it was for real. You know what I mean? It was authentic, it was genuine. So not only was I walking in my purpose while I was incarcerated, but God showed me upon release that God, and it was through one of my best friend's death, he was shot and killed. That morning, the following morning after I found out, I was mad at God, I was upset. God laid on my heart this vision that he was going to use music as a platform to reach the streets with the gospel. And the ministry is called Block Hustle, and the music is Block Hustle Entertainment. So my first song that I released when I came home, like my 3rd month out, got me signed by the 2nd biggest Christian hip hop label in the nation. And I went viral actually at work release before I was even released. Cause at work release, they release you from like a minimum security prison to go to work and come back with like an ankle monitor. They give you phones, but not smartphones. But I had an iPhone put in my locker at work, and I'm doing social media and I'm killing the game. I'm like documenting. Bro, I've been documenting my entire prison journey while I was incarcerated, having my homie record prison phone calls, recording videos off Jax or off like the prison kiosk.
Smart. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm filming my documentary right now. The day of my release, I had a camera crew at the gate.
That's awesome.
So we've been documenting my entire journey and transition home.
If I could go back and change anything, that would be it. Like to document the whole legal process, cameras in the courtroom, prison, more documented about that. But I never thought that prison would be the thing that I would be focused on and turn into something. I always thought it was the nightclub stuff because that's cool.
Yeah.
Kid owns a nightclub, this and that.
Yeah.
But it's not relatable to the average person.
Yeah.
Prison, this experience that not everyone gets to go through is very relatable to a lot of people because so many people are affected by it.
Of course.
What do you think would be your message to the viewers, the listeners, maybe even to your old self, to your teenage self? What do you want the kids that were your age that grew up the way you did and you know, made those wrong decisions? What do you want that message to get to them to be about?
Yeah, I would just say to everybody, number one, that like, yo, God doesn't create trash. You know, God creates royalty. He creates us as good. And not even to sound like cornball, kumbaya, cheesy Christian, but that's real, bro. You know, like despite whatever chaos or chaotic or traumatic experiences that we face as a child or coming up or no matter what cards we've been dealt, God has a huge call and purpose upon our life. And when we discover that, and from my perspective, I believe that's only through faith in Jesus and the sacrifice. And when we walk a lifestyle surrendered to him, God has a purpose for us. And when we commit all that unto him, bro, we'll live out our dreams. In the midst of a prison bid, when I'm on my lowest low, I had the ultimate peace, fulfillment, and contentment. And it's because of my faith in Christ. So my encouragement to anybody out there in the streets or the youth or whoever is we never truly identify who we are as people and our purpose for our life until we tap into the one who created us. So that would be my ultimate, you know, call to action, encouragement for everybody. And like now how it's all full circle, you said with the whole prison thing, I never thought about getting out and going back into a prison. I'm sure I would with ministry, but I didn't think it was going to be a thing. So when I come home, bro, like I'm just thinking it's cool that my music's being heard in the prison system on the tablets. But now because like a podcast in prison that I'm featured on, shout out to Mama Eve and Real Vida Nation, like I'm viral in the prison system to where I can go to a prison in Nebraska or a prison in Cali or in Florida or in New York or wherever, and they know who I am and they know my story because of the music and because of the podcast, right? And it's crazy that God will use our stories as redemptive stories to give inspiration and use us as a template to anybody doing time. We're convicts, bro. We're all the same. No one's better than nobody. God's doing it in us. He can do the same thing in you and more, 10 times. So to me, it's beautiful to be able to go back in there and speak life to them boys and encourage them that that place of incarceration, that place of brokenness, that can be a breeding ground where God can transform our life radically, give us vision and purpose, and not only in there, but upon release as well, you know?